Okay, we're going to start at the bottom of Lamed Tet Amud Bet, the last line. We just had before Rava give us halacha. Throughout the parak, we've seen Rava go Amar Rava Hilchusa, right, and conclude a sugya. We just had that. Now Rava is going to come with a number of statements in the name of his Rebbe Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman remembers a dayan, so he's getting these statements from his Rebbe. He did not get them in order. I mean, that the reason that they're all separate is because over time he got these from his Rebbe. Collated them and put them all together in one block now. So even though some of them might seem repetitive, they're all now laid out as halachot. And then Rav is going to say that he doesn't understand one of those halachot. So we start Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman. And why it's relevant to our sugya is for the first one, of course, which is Mevcha b'fnei shnayim ve'ein tzarich lomar k'tovu. That a mecha is sufficient to do in front of two edim. I mean, that's all you need are the two edim in order to qualify it as a proper mecha. Which is the other piece of the puzzle in each of these cases, is that you're not required to say that you write it down. I mean, that the edim can go ahead and write a shtar that you objected on your behalf, even if you did not explicitly tell them to go ahead and write it down. Now, the issue, Tosus raises an issue here, just on this case, which is that we have a general principle when it comes to edut. Edut is mipihem velo mipi ktavam. Right, that it has to be, when edim come to testify, it has to be an oral testimony. They have to come and speak to the Beis Din. They can't send a letter to the Beis Din saying that that this is their edut and they sign at the bottom. That doesn't work. The requirement of Torah, and that's what Rashi explains on the Torah, that the Sifri, when it says, mipihem, velo pikhtabam, means that you can't write a document with your edut in it. So how do you deal with this case over here? Here you have individuals making a mecha. Then the edim are going to go write down the mecha and sign on it. And we're going to say, okay, this document is a good document of mecha. So over here, Tosfos gives one of two answers, which actually makes it into a major machlokas. I'm showing him here. The first one is that the case of mecha we don't need so much. Mecha does not require full-fledged edut. Because all mecha requires is just to eliminate the chazakah. So we say that any irur, any sort of question that arises, automatically will knock off the chazakah. So we don't know full-fledged eidut, we don't need the regular dinim of eidut, we just need something that makes us, and how do we know that? He says, because look, we don't even care that the irur reached the machzik. Even though technically the mecha is only a good mecha if it could potentially reach him, but if he comes and tells us, or we have evidence that he never heard the mecha, it still does not help him. I mean, the chazakah is not a good chazakah because someone made an irur. So that's the fact is that this chazakah is not like a regular, strong raya where all of a sudden you can eat full-fledged eidut. So that's one way to answer the problem. By doing that, you preserve what is mipihem v'lo biktavam. It's not a question of mipihem v'lo biktavam because this is a totally different, qualitatively different type of eidut. On the other hand, right, the second answer is by Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam argues with Rashi in other places, but it's an amazing Rabbeinu Tam. I heard from Rabbeinu Tam that there are noagim l'shalech edim edutam b'igeret le-Beis Din. V'choshiv edut. And it's good edut. If you send it in written edut to Beis Din, that's a qualified edut. Ah, what about the Sifri that Rashi quotes? The Sifri says, mibam v'lo mibtavam. The Rabbeinu Tam says, you know what that means? He says that means that they have to be able to do it. All right, that means an yilin, right? Someone who's a mute cannot write his testimony down and send it to Beis Din. It's only if you can, mipihem v'lo mibtavam, means that you have to have the potential to give oral testimony. But, right? Right, call, right, exactly. All of those throughout Shas, where we say that, right, I'll call roi, right? Anything that is roi to do something, it's kilo, right, it's done. So the same thing over here, call roi lubila, right, is the equivalent of being, right, kolel. So over here too, if he's a roi to give testimony orally, then he can write in written testimony. It's a huge machlokas, you see, Rishonim, about whether you can have written testimony be given to Beis Din here. I mean, that'll make a difference in how you view this Gemara, but this Gemara is a technicality in the whole thing. But it's really a subject, this idea, whether you can write in to Beis Din your testimony. According to Rabbeinu Tam, that's no problem. As long as you can testify, you can write it. According to Rashi, no, that testimony has to be given orally, and written testimony will not accept it. In this case, it's an exception because we don't require full-fledged testimony. Right now, the next thing, Moda'a Bifnei Shnayim. Right, that if you want to give a moda'ah, now the moda'ah here is an indication that whatever you're about to do is not real. Whatever you're about to embark on is not really a true reflection of what you want to do. So that's a moda'ah. You're giving an announcement, but the announcement is really that you're revealing that I'm about to sell something, but I really don't want, I'm doing this under duress. I'm about to divorce this woman, but I am doing it under duress. So you give an indication beforehand. You go to two people, to Eidim, Moda b'fnei shnayim. You have to do it before to Eidim. Vein tzerech lomar k'tovu. Again, he does not have to indicate to the Eidim that they write it down. They may write down the Moda even without his knowledge. Again, in both of these cases, there's the one party who's making the claim, and to write it down is only to his benefit. So the basic principle will be that zochin l'adam shelo b'fanav, meaning that the Eidim are only doing something that is only to his benefit and not to his detriment. So therefore, they can go ahead and write this down. Then this moda.
Is it that zochin l'adam b'fanav is fine unless there's someone else?
Right, who might be hurt by this? By this situation.
The other guy is being hurt by this.
Right, by the moda, it's not that case because again, when he comes to us as Eidim, we're simply writing down what he has told us in his testimony. Right, we're not.
The first case
might be bigger because his irur, even though again it's really only him who's coming to us. He's not discussing the chazakah and the validity of the chazakah. He's just saying we're just writing down what he said. But there it might involve it might involve a second party, right? Which might bring us to a question of why are they allowed to write in that case, right? Why particularly in that case are they allowed to do such a thing?
So he knows that even if this doesn't have any impact to Aiden, he knows that there are Aiden out there that could testify that there was such a machah, he better hold on to his time. And if he doesn't, then he has only
right. So it also has that effect, which is not necessarily to his detriment, because if he keeps the shtar, he'll be fine. Right, very good. So now, this modal, what you do is, he writes down, he tells the Eidim, listen, I'm about to do something under duress. Now this is the one that Rob is going to have a problem with, so we're going to come back and discuss it again. So he writes beforehand, he says to the Eidim, listen, I'm selling this under duress. I'm divorcing her under duress. Whatever I do afterwards is not good. Because I'm telling you ahead of time that I don't want to do this, but I can't, for some reason I can't publicize what I'm about to do. So that's why it's no good. I'll refrain from going into too much detail because the Gemara is going to spend a lot of time on this one case. Then, Hoda b'fnei shnayim, v'tzarech lomar k'tovu. If a person makes an admission in front of two Eidim, to the effect that, listen, I owe this individual money, and he admits it before two Eidim. So again, two Eidim are sufficient to come to court and testify that he actually admitted it, but tzarech lomar k'tovu. In that case, he has to tell him to write it down, because it'll make a big difference there. That'll make a difference between it being like, for instance, a milva al peh and a milva b'shtar. So it might be that he's only willing to have it be a milva, his admission, he's only willing to have it to be a milva al peh. He's not willing to have it to be a milva b'shtar. So there it's l'chovato, right? His admission is l'chovato. We're not going to let the Eidim go and write it without his permission. They've got to seek his permission before they go ahead and write it down. And the kinyan b'fnei shnayim, ein tzarech lomar k'tovu. Kinyan, you can make a kinyan, you need two Eidim to have a kinyan, to testify about a kinyan. Ve'enu tzarech lomar k'tovu. And he again does not have to say, write it down. Because now, this is the real question comes up over here, which is, alright, kinyan b'fnei shtayim. But ein tzarech lomar k'tovu, true, it's the schus of one party. But for the other party, it's a huge detriment over here. You have two parties. One party is always very disadvantaged by this being written down over here that there was a kinyan between them. So how can over here you can say to the Eidim, ein tzarech lomar k'tovu, that he doesn't have to say write it down, and we say zoch shadam lo fanav, here there really is a second party that's going to lose by you doing this. So the Rashbam over here explains that it has to be that we're talking about a kinyan chalipin. That's the case that we're talking about a kinyan chalipin. Why? Because what's unique about a kinyan chalipin?
So he's... Both people
have a schut. In kinyan chalipin, both people have a schut. It works. I don't know if it's both schut. One person's giving up their property, is selling in that case.
Two people are giving up their property.
Right.
Nothing physically transfers.
Right, nothing physically transfers. So that's the rationale is indicative of the speed at which he wants the transaction to take place. Meaning that, had he really wanted to allow he wasn't so sure, he wanted this, he could have slowed the kinyan down. How do you slow a kinyan down? You tell him you have to take physical possession. You have to make a kinyan on the object. The fact that you want to do a kinyan sudar, that the mocher over here, say the mocher is the one that's, not the kinyan is the koneh here wants to write it down. The mocher accelerated the kinyan by doing a kinyan sudar. So his acceleration of the kinyan is indicative that he wants it to happen, and therefore the Eidim can feel okay about writing it down. That's what the Rashbam explains, that we're talking about kinyan sudar. The regular kinyan, you can't make that claim. You can make that claim there. Regular kinyan, the guy maybe doesn't want it written down. But over here, where he accelerates the kinyan by doing a kinyan sudar, right, that is indicative that it's the schut of both parties when they write it down.
Why can't we say, because let it be in front of the seller.
I'm saying you're making okimta that it's in front of the seller. So the Rashbam's okimta is that it was a kinyan sudar. Okay. Right, so you can have it, right, if it's
front
of the
seller. Why is that better than this weekend?
Because then over there, it's front of the seller, there's nothing to talk about. I mean, that's obvious that it worked, because in that case, then the seller knows about it and he's not. Here we're saying that even without the seller there, we're allowed to go out without the seller's permission and write a contract because he did it through a Kenyan Sudar. So I think that's a bigger chiddush, that the Sudar is indicative of acquiescence by the Mocher to write a contract down.
It's not all Kenyanim are done on the Kenyan Sudar.
Right.
So you're limiting.
Right.
The types of kinyanim that can fall within this halacha.
Right. So that is a Tosos address is somewhat you're saying. Tosos says, first of all, what's a kinyan b'fnei shnayim? It says a kinyan b'fnei shnayim is not that if you have less than shnayim, it's not a kinyan. I mean, that what happens if you do a kinyan with less than two people? Does that mean that there's no kinyan? When you go to the Rav to sell your chametz, you do a kinyan with the Rav, there's no two edim there, so that's not a kinyan.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. But there's no two edim there to the kinyan. So if you don't have any Kenyan, he's saying that it's not Ois Kenyan. It's not a Kenyan when you don't have two Eidim. The two Eidim here are what? Are to give, that they can testify about. I mean, that gives Tokef, like we've talked about before, to the Kenyan. That's one. Number two is he deals with Tzvi's question, and
he's... without the Eidim, if nobody challenges it, there's no concern in my ownership of the...
Right. It's a full-fledged Kenyan without Eidim. It's just you need Eidim if someone's going to question the Kenyan, right? That's the way you need to protect yourself, right? Now, the Ktovu part, Tosus writes something, this Tzvi, I think, addresses your question a little bit, which is, he says, V'kotvin b'lo shuto kozman shlo chazer bo, that you're allowed to write, even without his permission, you can write it without the buyer's permission, as long as he's not chozer. He didn't want to retract the statement. Umiyo yachol lachzor bo. He does have a right to go back on it. Imluchebe or checking is all here with the koneh, which according to Dosa sounds like the whole problem here is the koneh side and not the mocher. It seems to be that the mocher is on board and he wants it written down. And it's the koneh who's having the little questions about whether he really wants to go through with this or not. And that's how Dosa solves the problem. He says the mocher is on board for the writing. He says go ahead and write it, and that's basically your answer. I think the Rashbam is a much bigger chiddush that even by Kenyan Sudor, without the Mocher's permission, you can go ahead because it's clearly indicative of the fact that you are willing to give it over here. Our last one is, Shoal, what you asked about before was Kiyum Shtarot, the ability to Mekayim a Shtar, which is, we've seen in other places called as either Henpek or Eshray Milsa, all these things where Beis Din validates some sort of contract testimony that's written down, when they go ahead and they put their stamp of approval on it, that's called a henpek. That has to be before Fnei Shlosha. That has to be before a Beis Din. And that's not sufficient to have Edut in this case. Edut will not do the job, because why Edut is no better, meaning that in any sense, the Edim that come to testify are no better, right, than the original Edim that are signed on the contract. If you want to make this into something that is beyond, right, to question, and beyond, right, with beyond any, your Urim on the contract, you got to go to a Beis Din who then will validate what's in there. Once the Beis Din is validated, then you can use this contract and bring it at any time. You never have to go back at the other Edim. So that you need Shlosha. Now this even according to...
Unimpeachable.
Right. Unimpeachable, thank you. Some good words. This is even according to Rav Nachman. It's interesting that the Rashba man also tried to deal with this. Rav Nachman is of a Shita in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which we'll get to, that a Beis Din, generally as a Beis Din has to be Shlosha. Rav Nachman says, a Beis Din Shoshnayim is a Beis Din about Beis Din Chatzuf. In that you're not supposed to have a Beis Din of two. But if you do have a Beis Din of two, it works as a Beis Din. So Rashba and Tosfos says, why can't over here, according to Rav Nachman, if you had two, why can't it be a Beis Din? I mean, why can't that suffice to be a Beis Din if his opinion in other places that two is a Beis Din? So fine, they're not even. Let them be a Beis Din. So Tosfos' answer is basically that they have to specify that it's a Beis Din. I mean, that the problem here is not, right, the issue of whether it's Edim because two is Edim and three is Beis Din. But the fact is, even if you use two, if you call them a Beis Din, maybe it could work in that case, maybe. But that the fact that he calls them Edim or he looks at them as Edim, that's not going to work for a henpek. You have to have a Beis Din there. So you have to qualify them or you have to define them as a Beis Din. And if he doesn't say Beis Din, you are a Beis Din, then that's not qualified if he has two people. If he has three there, then we know right already that it's a Beis Din or it's qualified as a Beis Din. Rashbam doesn't necessarily give a... It gives a logic to it because he says that it's a psak din. He says, if you say the two works here, then he says, what's the difference between a hempek and the shtar that we mentioned before? Before we said a shtar requires two, right? A hoda or a moda b'fnei shnayim, that requires two. Then you have a hempek here that requires three. If you say the two works by a hempek, then how is this any different than any regular shtar? He says, in order for it to be a psak din and to get a tokif, you need three. He says, even according to Rav Nachman, he says a beis din of shtayim is a beis din chotzev, but a good beis din, that will not qualify here for a beis din to validate a shtar. To validate a shtar, you need three. Because otherwise, what's it different than Edim in any other place? If it's not different than Edim in any other place, then having two more Edim testify about something is the same thing as having any other star in the world, and that doesn't do anything for you.
Because it is hearsay in this instance, because they are just testifying to what they heard from other Edim, and that doesn't work with Edim, only with the Beis Din.
So even Rav Nachman Lishitato will require three. Rabba, Ikashali, if I had one problem with Rav Nachman's list of Dinim here, Hakashali, this is what bothers me. Hakinyan, Heichi Domi. Right, this is Beis Din Domi. If it's like a Maisa Beis Din, Libay Tlato, then you should require three. Iloka Maisa Beis Din Domi, Amai Enu Tzarech Lamark, Tovu. Right, why doesn't he have to say, write it down? Why does he have to literally say to them, I'm writing it down? He says, Butter the Bai Hadar Pashta. After he asks the question, this is what he answers. Lolam Labka Maisa Beis Din Domi. It's not a Maisa Beis Din, so then you don't require three. Bahacha Time Amai De Enu Tzarech Lamark, Tovu. Why does he have to write down Ktovu? Mishom, Stam Kinyan Lektiva Omeid. A Stam Kinyan is Lektiva Omeid. So according to Tosa, Stam Kinyan Lektiva Omeid is any Kinyan. Any Kinyan that you have is Lektiva Omeid. That means that when someone has a transaction, the underlying assumption is that you're going to document this transaction. So if you document the transaction, that's fine. Mocher, we don't worry about the Mocher. Koneh, if he disagrees, if he says don't write it down, that's fine. But if he says write it down, and he says if he's okay with it, I mean, if he doesn't say otherwise, the assumption is that you go ahead and write it down. And that's why you can write it down. The Rashbam explains over here, and this is what I brought to you earlier, the Rashbam says it's only true in a Kinyan Sudar, Kinyan Chabilipin. And Kinyan Chalipin is Stam Kinyan Chalipin is Nitan Lichatev. Because of this idea of expediting the Kinyan means that he wants everything to be done. He wants it done fast, and he wants it done right. So therefore we say Tovu, write it down. But that will not be true of other Kinyanim. It's unique to a Kinyan Sudar over here. Right now, Rab over of Yosef, Damrei Tarvayu, so this is going back to the case of Moda'a that we had earlier. Lo Kadvinin Moda'a, Elamand Lo Tzayid Dino. We only write a Moda'a for someone who wouldn't otherwise come to court and listen to what the court says. I mean, why? Otherwise, what would you do? He can make a claim to you. Listen, if you had questions about this whole contract, this is done under duress. He says, look, I sold this under duress. And look, I went to 2 Adim beforehand and I told them. So the other individual says, why don't you just go to Beis Din? Just go to Beis Din and tell them that you're doing this under duress. So now, if the individual says you don't listen to Beis Din, right, that you're not going to listen to Beis Din, then writing the Moda'a has value. Because going to Beis Din is not going to help. In this case, this guy doesn't listen to Piskei Beis Din. So writing the Moda'a is going to give him a contractual lock here that your contract is not a valid contract.
Why would he listen to this?
Right. He won't maybe not listen to the Moda'a, but if it's a valid Moda'a. I mean, that's what... But if you cases where the individual will not listen to Beis Din and going to Beis Din is of no value, then we will allow you to write a Moda'a down so you have another contract that predates his contract. Okay, that's the statement. Now, Abayev Rava Damri Tavayu Afilu Alai V'Alecha says, even about you and me, they can write a Moda'a. Meaning that if we are the ones who are buying and contracting over here, you can write a Moda'a that predates our contract for anybody. Meaning that for anybody. Write a Moda'a for anybody. There is no qualification about who does it. Now, the Moda'a over here, and your question, David, over here, is Tosos asks, he does not understand the position of Rabbi Rav Yosef. It's the last Tosos on the Amud, he says, Tema. He goes through the whole thing, he says, I do not understand what they're talking about, what case they're talking about, and why they make their statement. I'm just going to I'll leave it open, but Tosos leaves it as a complete Tema. He goes through the whole rest of this Gemara now, he leaves it as a Tema, he doesn't know where Rabbi Rav Yosef's position comes from. But the basic premise of their position is that Moda'a is we don't want to encourage people to write moda'ot, which is we don't want this where everybody's going ahead and doing transactions and beforehand they're trying to undermine the transactions. We don't want this to become a common practice. We want it to be in a very unique, limited case, which is he won't listen to Beis Din, and we're going to see it's going to be even more limited in a second by what type of contracts you can do it about. So that's what they did. They limited it. The others are buying room says, no, moda'a works everywhere. Yeah, you have ability. You have a contract that predates the other contract. That's fine. But now we're going to limit this. Amrei Naradai, Ko Moda'a Delok Tibei Ana Yadina Bei Beunsa Deplanya La Modoi. So that any Moda'a, these pre-contracts that say that I was under duress, only work when the Edim say we know what the onus is. We know what the duress is. The Edim has to say we saw the onus or we know about it. We're well aware of what it is. Not that he told us he's under duress. Rather, they have to be independently aware of the duress that he's under in this situation. So, moda demai. What moda are we talking about here? E moda. If it's a case of gita and matanta, gilui milsa ba'almahi. If it's coming about a get or a gift, then there's nothing to talk about here. Why? What's with a get and a gift? A get and a gift, there is, the only reason that a person gives a get or a gift is because they're willing to give it. They get nothing in return. They get no compensation for it. They're getting absolutely nothing for doing this. So if they choose to give a gift, they give it. If they don't choose to give it, if they won't give it. So now, if someone breaks a bondah and says, I'm under duress, I'm giving this because I'm under duress, we're going to believe them. Because their other choice, if they weren't under duress, was not to give the gift or not to give the get. So the alternative, it's almost like amigo in a sense, right? The alternative is to just not give it. The fact that they're giving it, and they say we're giving it under duress, it should be believed in that case, because there's no ulterior motive for them not to. But that's, now the moda, again, does not have to be in this case, the Edim don't even have to know what the onus is. They just have to know that he came and declared before them that it's an onus, because there he's believed. I mean, it's a gilui milsa that there was some problem in the case. So what's the other possibility? So that's Eve Zvine. So what are you going to say? It's a contractual sale over here? Rava looked at moda Zvine. He says, Rava has a blanket statement that we do not write moda'ot on sales. Why? Because what are we worried about in sales? We worry about in sales is that there is a mitigating factor. What's the mitigating factor in a sale? Money. When you sell something, you get money. So now what are we worried about? This guy is desperate for cash right now. He really doesn't want to sell the property, but he's desperate for cash. So what does he do? He sells the property, but he writes a moda'ot beforehand. So the reason he's selling the property is because he needs the money. And it's a real sale.
It's like floating himself along.
Right. Exactly. Right. So he's lending, he's trying to get himself the money, but be able to work a way out where it's, if I get the money back, I can back out because I'll show the moda'ot afterwards. So what we want to prevent is this, you know, this market of people who are going to go ahead and then they're going to sell and write a moda'ot beforehand because they're not doing it because they're under duress. They're under duress, but monetary duress, and they're getting the money. So that type of duress is not real duress where it should protect you against, right, against such a case. So that's right. So why?
If everyone makes such a blanket statement, what does somebody think they are being forced?
So that's exactly right. So that's the answer of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Olam Dizvine, it is a case of a sale, but Modi Rava Eichad Onis Ukmaisa de Pardesa. A case where it's an Onis and the Maisa of a Pardes, and the Gemara is going to give this Maisa over here, where the duress is so obvious or so clear, then in that case we write him a Moda'a. Because there the Edim are so aware of it, they understand, they know the circumstances that are right, at hand. And because they know the circumstances, they're allowed to write a moda'ah. And that's the answer. The Gemara says, well, we only write, Edim are only allowed to write a moda'ah in cases where they know the duress and they know the onus, means that they have to be fully aware. By Zvine, we do not allow them to write it just because he says he's under duress. And we don't allow them to write it until they really know all the situation. They know it so well that they know that for sure that he's under duress to make the sale. What is a sale like that? What type of situation is that? Dao Gavra, the Mashkin Pardes of the Chavre, gave over a Pardes to his friend as a Mashkon, Letlachnin, for 3 years. Butter the Ach Letlachne, after he ate it for 3 years, right, Tlachne Chazaka, that he would have Chazaka, Samar, Imizavantli Mutav, if you sell this property, make good. Vilo, if not, Kavishna, the Shtar Mashkanta, Vamina Lakucha Hubiyadi. I'm going to rip up the Shtar Mashkanta, and I'm going to say I bought it. Kiai Gavna, Kadvina Moda. In that case, you create a moda'ah. So there, the clear the sale is under duress. He doesn't want to sell it. He has to sell it because his other choice is that he loses the property without any compensation. So the better of the two choices for him is to sell it in order to get his money versus losing the property entirely. So in that case, if the Edim are aware of the fact that it's an ones, right, and they understand that it's an ones, meaning that they're aware of the whole situation here, there we allow them to go ahead and write about such a case. There's no question that he should have made a macha. So that's his problem, that he make a macha. It doesn't mean that the other individuals, I mean, it's lying. He's not telling the truth. Yeah, that there's a problem here, and we're trying to help him out. Now, he says that the machlokas here has to do with Rava's position later on in the Gemara Memchet. We'll get there when we get to Memchet. The Rashbam says that Rava's position here is near the time of the Rava, Meshum Darmin Lekaman Vepirkin, Yochasa Tluya, Vizavin Zvine Zvine. That a person who is put into that dress and he has to make a sale, that his sale is a good sale, and it depends what. If they tell him, pick the field you want to sell, then he picks the field, then it's a good sale, and he can't get back out of it. If they take it against his will, meaning that he doesn't have a choice about the field, and it's dumb, and then they go ahead and take it, then he has the right to back out. And that'd be some same sort of differentiation over here, where Rava says that here the person's putting him under duress for the sale, but he has no choice in the sale. You know, the property is being determined because that was the mashkon, he's taking his property without any consideration. Whereas if you sell the property, then we don't allow you to put up a modah, because by you selling the property, it's an indication that you're choosing which property to sell, and you're going ahead and selling it. So that'd be the differentiation. Rava says, Rav the Shittato, Rav Huna over there says that he disagrees with Rava, and the Rashi says, according to Rav Huna, you could write a modah even on any sale. Any sale you can write a modah on is no problem. So, but at least for our Gemara here, for Rava Lashitato, the conclusion of the Gemara is, we've really narrowed down what a Moda'ah is. These Moda'ah, where you can write them for duress. Again, if it's a case of Matana Gita, that you can write all day and all night, because it's clear, again, the alternative or the better solution would be just not to write them. The fact that he wrote them and he says it was done under duress, there we're going to believe him, because it makes no sense what he's doing unless he really was under duress. And there, again, the Edim do not need, according to the Rashbam, they don't need direct evidence that there's an onis. They just need to tell him there's an onis, that's fine. When it comes to a sale, according to Rava, Moda, blanket does not work. No matter, even unless the Edim are so aware of what the onis is, but aware to the point where he has no choice in the matter, has no choice in which field he's doing it with, meaning that it's a very narrow, he's really locked into a situation where he's going to lose the field unless he does something about it. And that's the case where Moda is going to work, and that's what the statement of Nardai say, that they have to know about the onus, that's narrowed down to this case over here. That one case is Zvine.
The Rach asks a very, very interesting question over here. The Rashbam quotes him. He's saying, what is the exact circumstances under which this all transpires? I mean, this whole case of the onus of the Pardesa, how are the Edim exactly involved? Because if the Edim witnessed the extortion, then you don't need a Moda. All you have to do is bring the Edim to court to say he was extorted. So it must be a case where the Edim don't see the extortion, but then how are they aware of the onus over here? So the Rach comes up with a very innovative, clever way to have the extortion be uncovered without the Edim directly seeing it. And as that is that he comes to the Edim and says, listen, I am going to go to this individual and tell him that I want my land back. And he's going to make a claim, l'kuach hubiyadi, that I purchased it, and I don't need to give you anything because I've lived here for 3 years. So he basically makes a claim that it was l'kuach hubiyadi, it's mine, I don't have to do anything for you. Then he goes back, the individual, and says, on the side, without the Edim there, he says, listen, I'm going to agree to your extortion, and I'm going to give you the land. I'm going to go write you a shtar mechira, and you're going to pay me the money. So that's what he does. He goes ahead, writes a shtar mechira, gets the money. But before he does that, he goes to the Edim, those same Edim, and says, I want to write a moda'ah for you to know that the only reason I'm doing this is because he came, Baba Kifim, he came and extorted me to get the property out. So he writes it down. Then he, later on, goes to court. He shows up in the court, and he says, listen, I want my property back. So now, what's the claim of the individual? There are only two possible claims. He could say, listen, I bought it, and I don't need any shtar because I have the chazakah here. But we can whip out. In the meantime, we can whip the shtar mechira. We just had a shtar mechira that was written. We have witnesses on the shtar mechira that he bought it today. So then what's his other possibility? He could say, listen, I bought it from you. I paid for it. It's all mine. But then what does the individual, the defendant over here, do? He pulls out the moda'ah. He pulls out the two Edim and says, listen, before I sold it to him, I told him I did it under duress. And they were witnesses that this individual first made a claim that it was really his, and then he comes to make a shtar mechira. So he can't have it both ways. He's first making a claim that it was his, and now he's making a claim that it's a shtar mechira. So from this, we can prove that he's making a false claim. So that's how the Edim will come to know about the extortion and the duress without directly witnessing the extortion. That was the explanation of the Rach to explain this case over here.
Right now, the next part of the Gemara, which is Amar Rav Yehuda, Hai Mantanta Tmirta Lo Magbiyin Bei. A gift that is given with hidden Edim, we do not collect with such a gift. So Gemara says, what does that mean? That you have hidden Edim over here. Hei Chidami Matanta Tmirta. What's a gift that's given with planted Edim or hidden Edim? So Amar Rav Yosef, the first question of Rav Yosef is, Amar Lohu Lesadei Zilu Atmure Vekatvule. Go and hide and write him this gift. Right? Meaning that you go hide, listen to me that I'm telling you that I'm giving him this gift, and then, or go and hide and write this in private. Don't let anybody know you're writing down this gift. Right? Over there, we say that that's not a good gift, that's not a good contract. Why? What's he trying to do? Right? He's trying to undermine a contract that he's going to write afterwards. He's basically gifting the contract. We're going to see a case like this in the Gemara in a second. But what? He's trying to gift it in order to prevent the gift from being a gift or preventing the next transaction from working. So he says, go, shh, you go write it down over there. Don't tell anybody that you wrote it down. So again, it's equivalent of a moda'ah. Right? He's trying to create or generate a moda'ah over here. By generating a moda'ah, right? We just said before, it doesn't work by cases of Zvina. Big Adam, right? Amar of Yosef, Delo Amar Lehu, Titvu B'Shukul U'Bibraita B'Tichtu V'Le. Don't go out in public and write this contract down. So as opposed to the other one, which says go and hide actively, he's telling them to hide themselves. Over here it says do not write it in public. That's the other option in Rabbi Yosef's Shita. My Benayu, what's the difference between their two Lashonot? Ikh Benayu Stama. He doesn't say anything to them, right? Meaning that in the Stam case. So in the Stam case, according to the first Lashon of Rabbi Yosef, according to the first Lashon of Rabbi Yosef, in a Stam case, that's fine. Because he didn't tell them to go and hide. Only if he actively tells them to go hide is it not a good contract. Whereas according to the second Lashon, he has to tell them, go write this in public. That the only way a good matzar matana is good and rightful for Adam to write down, he has to go say to them, go write it in the, you know, in the shuk, go write it in public, make this a publicly known contract. Unless he makes that statement, it's not a good contract anymore, according to that second lashon. Tosus raises the issue, what do we do with contracts today? There's nobody here. Today people say all the time, go write this contract down, and they don't say to them, go write it in the, you know, the shuk, go write it in public. So Tosus says, the answer is that today in our contracts, we write, that this contract, katvua b'shuka v'chatmua b'bara. They wrote it out in public and they signed it in public. So since the shtar includes that lashon, when he tells you or indicates you to go write the shtar down, he means write it like what the lashon of the shtar is. What's the lashon of the shtar? Write it in public like that. So he's basically using the template or the fixed lashon that's in the shtar. And when he indicates you to go write a shtar, he means do it based on the language that's in the shtar. And that's why today it's okay to do such a thing. He says, but in the time of the Amoraim, that's what he says here, that's what we do today. But in the time of Amoraim, that wasn't the Minhag. And therefore, when you do it Stam, it didn't work. In the time of the Amoraim, they didn't add that Lashon in. So therefore, if he says in Stam, write it, according to that second Lishna in Rabbi Yosef, it wouldn't work. That's how Tosu solves the problem for today. One thing that's important. The other thing that's important here, which I didn't address before, but it has to do with the writing of Shtarot today, is that when we write a Shtar today, the Rashbam writes, brings it down, Tosu also brings it down, is that in our Shtarot, we indicate in there that the Shtar, or we make the individual say that there are no outstanding Moda'ot on the Shtar. There are no Shtar. Like when someone writes a Get, we make the Baal write, that I nullify, I mevatel any Moda'ah that was predated this Get. In order to prevent someone from creating a problem where we know that the get's not real or we prevent them, today we do that. We make everybody, before they write any contract, before they write a shtar, to write, I am eliminating any moda'ah, I'm mevatel beforehand any moda'ah that I have outstanding on this get, in order to make sure that it's free and clear and they don't have to worry about any moda'ot that exist. Right now, he can still be mevatel the get afterwards, before it's given, but he can't be mevatel it, meaning that the writing of the get, he can't change at this point because he's mevatel any moda'ah. So that's just a practice today, where we force the Baalim, if they're going to give a get, in these situations, that's mostly where it would come up, but in contracts to say beforehand, moda'ah, that we say that everything beforehand has now been nitbatel. Right now the Gemara continues. Amarava, v'havia moda'ah l'chaverta. Now, a second contract could be a moda'ah to its brother, or to its friend. So, what is the case? What's this case here? And obviously, Machlokas or Ashbam and the Rabbeinu Gershom might explain it, whether it's the second contract or the first contract, but we'll see, I'll explain it as we go through the case. Amar Papa. Hadar Rava Labrafeirushit, Mar El Mechlal Litmar. Rava's statement was not made explicitly, but was implicit from a case. What was the case? Da'u Gabar the Azal Dikdushe Itita. He went to marry a woman. Amrale, she drove a hard bargain. Ikatafle Kula Nechsech, right? Or Nechsecha, if you give me all of your property, Havinamach, I'll marry you. I won't marry you. So she drove a hard bargain. She says, listen, here's the condition of our marriage. You give me everything you own. All right, I'm no problem. I'm willing to marry you, but you just got to give me everything you own. So what did he do? He really wanted to marry this woman. So he goes ahead and writes her all of his possessions. After break, Shisha. He already had a son, an older son that was around and says, what about me? What do you mean? You just gave this woman all your property, and now I'm left with nothing. How could that be? Why would you do such a thing? Right, so then, what does he do? So he says, Amalahu Sadei, Zilu Atamaru Bavur Yamin, V'katvuli. Go over there, you know, on my side over here, write a contract that says what? That I'm gifting all my property to my son. Right, so what is he doing? He's trying to create according to the Rashbam, he's trying to create a shtar that predates the other shtar. Which is that he's gifted all his property to his son, right? And then he goes and does this kiddushin with the woman, and he's basically faking her out because he's saying, I'm giving all my property to you, and then he's going to say afterwards, he's going to bring out his son's shtar, and he says, that no, the property doesn't belong to me, it all belongs to my son already.
Did he write the shtar to the woman
No, that has to be. According to Rashi, he predated the shtar. That the shtar is beforehand. That this takes place before the kedushin takes place. So after the kamei de Rava, they went before Rava. Amalo lo markana v'lo markana. Says neither of the kinyanim work. Right, the second kinyan doesn't work because you have the shtar to the sun beforehand. That doesn't work. The shtar to the sun doesn't work because the only purpose of the shtar to the sun was to prevent the kinyan to the woman. He didn't really give it all to his son. He only did it in order to prevent the success, subsequent kinyan from taking place. He wasn't really intending to give a real kinyan. So mandachaza, whoever saw this, savar mishum davi modalecher vada. The people who thought that the reason that it worked, or that the case was over here, was that the contract nullified the following contract. Meaning that the first contract was simply a moda'ah to prevent the second contract from taking place. And the first contract was no good because he did it, itamrali, right? He says, go hide the contract. So when they go hide the contract, that's not a valid contract. So let's start with that. That's gone. But it's valid enough that it's a moda'ah to prevent the second contract from taking hold. That's what the Rashman says. That's what people thought. Velohi, that's not the case. That's not the psak halach over here. That's wrong. The circumstances in the case are indicative of the fact that, meaning that there's circumstantial evidence through the case itself, that that's what he intended over here. Alright? Aval, hocha, mar nechale de likne, mar lo nechale de nikne. That's not true in normal cases. In normal cases of Kenyan, where the second Kenyan, according to Rashi, takes place, who wants the second kinyan to go through? The buyer. Who doesn't want the second kinyan to go through? The mocher. So over there, you have two parties, right, you have two parties involved. One party wants to go through, the other one doesn't want it to go through. So then when he goes ahead beforehand and writes a moda'ah or tries to write these contracts that are undermining the second contract, we're not going to allow it to go through. We're not going to allow that to prevent the second kinyan from going through. That's not going to work in that case because the first contract is not a good contract. And it's not a good, we don't allow for moda'ah by zvineh. And therefore, it's not going to work at all. Why does it work by kiddushin? Rashi explains the case here. So he says, if you do a private, like one of these side transactions where you say, write it privately, it's not a good moda, it doesn't stop the other contract. Unless there's an ones or duress in the second case, ones the muchach, duress that is obvious. Why? Right? What's the ones that's duress over here? Is that the only reason he's giving her the property is only to marry her. He doesn't want to really give her the property. How do we know he doesn't want to give her the property? Because he wrote beforehand all the property to his son. So over there, it's mucha milsa that he doesn't want to gift it to her. And right, the only reason he's doing it is because he's being forced by the kiddushin to gift it to her. He wouldn't have given it otherwise. The other cases where he's selling, where he's getting money for it, or in cases where he's gifting it without any other alternate duress that is muchach that we know about, over there it doesn't serve as a block for the contract to go through. So that's the difference between the cases is whether the duress placed on him or the second situation is clear that he doesn't really want to go through it. And because he doesn't want to go through it, that's why we know he's writing the first one. But in the second one, it's a full-fledged contract that he sold this something to someone else. And then he comes along and says, I wrote this contract first. There in the second case, it's not clear why he sold it or didn't, or was under duress. Again, unless there's clear evidence from Edim that he was under duress. So now, the Gemara wants to know, Ibai Luhu. Stama Mai. What's the din? We had it before. Tula Shonos and Rabbi Yosef. What's the din by Stama Mai? So, Vina Mar, Lo Chashinan. We don't worry about it in that case. Ravashi Amar, Chashinan. That we do worry about it in that case, meaning that we worry about a Tamirta, and that becomes a Moda'a, and Hilchas Chashinan, that we do worry about it. We're Choshesh for a case where he just says it's Stam, right? That would be a problem of Moda'a, and it would be a good Moda'a in that case. That's what we're Choshesh for in that case. Now, this is all according to the Rashbam. The way the Rabbeinu Gershom learns it, the problem is the second contract. That the second contract is a moda'ah on the first contract. The second contract undermines the first contract, which is interesting. The Rashi says it's all about the first contract, and that's like a regular moda'ah, that you have to precede the other contract. The Rabbeinu Gershom reads the Gemara differently. He says, in all these cases, for instance, I'll read you the case here. Shimkata matana tova lechad, right? Ktuva v'chatuma v'shuk o bebara. V'hadar oto matana atzma ktuva lacher. B'tmirta. And then afterwards, he gifts it to someone else privately. Eino matana. Lozu for lozu. Both of them are not a good matana. Why? The shnia moda l'chaverta rishona. The second one is indicative of a problem for the first one.
So there's no
shtar
in the world.
Yeah. It's amazing. Deha lo nechle de rishon konet. Dehoyo v'kotav l'sheni, shnia t'munahi, k'gon hay maise. According to like this case. Now again, he'll narrow it down to the case over here where it's unsa de mukha. But he allows you to have it. Ulubatar Hachi says, Kotav le idach betmirta, that he wrote it to the son afterwards in a hidden case. It's a very big nafkamina between, it's very difficult to understand the Rabbeinu Gershom say, but it's a big nafkamina between them. The Rashbam says that the only way it works is a madah, so you write it beforehand. And it's a much onus de mukha. That's a case where it works. The Rabbeinu Gershom is suggesting that if it's onis de mukha, you can even write the contract post the first contract. Which, I, again, is a very, very difficult situation
maybe,
where you can
say. It was such an onus that he didn't have an opportunity to do it.
Well, that's the answer. The answer is that it's an onus, such an onus. But here, the case by Kiddushin, I mean, that's onus de mukha, but it's not so, right, like where he's under duress, where they're going to kill him if he doesn't do something. That's not that type of duress he's under. So there, it's only afterwards that it's indicating, which to me is very difficult, that you can have the first
right.
A little bit better, because then why did he, right, his son, right, the son raised it afterwards, which you asked me at the time, right, which I said to you, the Rabbeinu Gershom, I learned like you, that it's afterwards. But it's much more difficult shot, that does flow a little bit better with the language, but that you can actually indicate afterwards that there was a modal. We said until next point, the modal have to always be beforehand. That's what it seems to be. The whole idea of indicating duress is that you have to precede it. It has to precede the fact, not after the fact. After the fact, of course, everybody's under duress after the fact. Right? Everybody wants to get out of a contract is under, duress. So that's the big difference. All right, so just to conclude, just a quick summary of what we saw today, right? We had all these cases that Rav Nachman brings, the Rebbe brings Meshem Rav Nachman, that require two. The two that he questioned, one was Dino, how go by Kenyan? How does Kenyan work? We saw that the Rashbam believes that Kenyan is only by Kenyan Sudar, you're allowed to write it without the permission of both parties. Tos says you can write it down, right, no matter what the Kenyan is, because Kenyan nitan li katev. That's it. Kenyanim are made to be written down. Doesn't matter what type of Kenyan. That's the solution over here. Now, the next thing we talk about is Moda, under duress. Are you allowed to put predate Shtarot to tell you that you're under duress? One case, the answer is by Gitim and Metanot, yes, for sure you can do it, because there, you had a better alternative, which is not to write it at all. So there we say it works. In the Edim, we write it down, we're fine with that. When it comes to Zvine, when it comes to sales, we do not allow it, at least according to Rav and Rav Nachman, we do not allow it, L'shitatan, why? Because everybody's going to do that. Everybody's going to say they're under duress because they want to get their money, they want to be able to borrow the money and then give it back in the end and get their property back. So we don't allow it except if it's unsa de mukha. Unsa de mukha again is what? A case where the Edim know for certain and they're aware of the circumstances. They know this guy's trying to pressure him into doing it. The only way for him to save himself is to do this action, and therefore we allow the onus to go through. Now that will be the same answer that we have by Tamirta. The same answer is by when you write a contract that is hidden. Right, the only time that a hidden contract works to prevent or works as a modah is where, again, the onus de mukha. It's an onus or duress that is obvious. The duress that's obvious, which means that, again, the Gemara's definition of onus over here is a little different, which is that he was under duress to marry this woman. It's the only way he could marry this woman, but we know he didn't really want to give it. He didn't want to give it over there. So in the case we didn't want to give it, we say that neither contract goes through. Both contracts are null and void. So in that case, they don't work because it's onus de mukha, and therefore both contracts are invalid. According to Tzvi, brought the Meiri that the Kedushin goes through. In that case, I think I could see Rishonim saying that the Kedushin doesn't go through because the Tanai fell apart, and therefore there's no Kedushin over here. All right. And then we had this last thing where there were Choshesh for such a case in Rav Yosef, and the answer is yes, we are Choshesh for those cases where he says, "Go on, we're not Goveh with such a contract." Right? And therefore we have to write inside of a contract. Today our Lashon, the contract is Shuka and Bara, right? That everybody knows it. And today we assume that we write it into the contract, and we say anybody says it's stops as if it's written into the contract. Therefore we don't have to worry about this problem today. All right, we'll stop over here.